Science writer Elizabeth Preston has spent years exploring the strange brilliance of the natural world in places like the Atlantic and the New York Times. In her new book, The Creature's Guide to Caring, she turns to animal parenting, from devoted octopuses to fiercely protected birds and mammals, revealing how care, survival, and connection shape life across species. The book blends reporting, evolutionary science, and wonder-filled storytelling into a look at what creatures can teach us about raising the next generation. Again, the name of the book is The Creature's Guide to Caring, How Animal Parents Teach Us That Humans Were Born to Care. It's a great pleasure to welcome Elizabeth Preston to this morning's roundtable. Elizabeth, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
You are a science journalist, and I'm curious what brought you to this particular subject of looking at the caring of creatures.
Yeah, people probably won't be surprised to hear that I have two creatures myself, two human creatures. I have kids who are 6 and 9 currently. And when I started researching this topic, one of them was just born. But when I became a parent, I became more aware of the whole world of parenting media, which is a lot of advice. It's a lot that's prescriptive. And it seems to generally treat parenting as kind of a human problem, like this is something unique to us and our species. But as a journalist, I really love to write about evolutionary biology and animal behavior. I like to look at questions through the lens of how did all the other animals on Earth evolve? Where does our evolutionary story fit in with the other species? And so I was really interested in what I would find when I used that lens to look at the topic of parenting.
When it comes to that lens, what was it that did you have specific questions that you wanted to answer?
I started my investigation very open-ended. I just wanted to know what's going on in the field of the evolution of parenting. You know, how did we get here? How did all of us get to where we are today? And I learned a few things right away. One was that in the parenting world broadly, caring for your young is actually not common. So if you look across all kinds of animals, the majority do not care for their young. They might lay an egg somewhere or a bunch of eggs somewhere, fertilize them, and then move on with their lives. They're done.
Right.
But parenting has arisen many, many times in all these different distant branches of the tree of life. So this tells us that it's really important for these species that have evolved it. It's really beneficial. And nature keeps inventing parenting over and over again.
So talk about that reinvention of parenting, of what happens. Give us an example, if you can, of what exactly goes on.
So in mammals, of course, parenting all kind of looks pretty similar. You can't get too weird in the mammals because every mammal, it's right there in the name, mammal, we need milk. And so moms are always involved in caretaking in mammals. But if you look farther afield, you can find a lot of different models for how to care for young. And a lot of them involve moms less or not at all. Among fishes, only a minority of fishes care for their young. But among those species who do, it's much, much more common for it to be the dad who does all of the caretaking himself.
So what do we learn from that in the sense of when you find this information, you were interested, I guess, really in from species to species, right?
Yes, I was interested in learning about all the different ways that nature has solved this or addressed, tried to solve this problem of how to care for our young, how to keep this creature alive that we've created, and how to propagate our genes. But I was also interested in what that would tell us about humans, how we were related to these other caretaking stories, and how we might be unique.
And I mean, a question is, like, are humans the best at this out there, as far as are humans the best of being parents?
Gosh, I don't know how you would measure the best. Maybe, you know, if you measured in terms of the number of offspring that we send into the next generation, we would be a lot less efficient than many animals that can have, a bunch of babies every year. We have one baby and they're very, very slow growing. They take a ton of investment to raise to adulthood. And so in our whole lifetime, we might only have a few children. So in that sense, we wouldn't measure up against, a fish or a frog or some birds.
I
But
guess statistically, living and dying would be one way of looking at it, I guess.
right. But another way to look would be, how much effort are we putting in? How hard are we trying? And we do have to put a ton of resources into our children because they're so needy and so slow to develop. It takes us so many years to fully grow into our bodies and our big brains.
But it's in us, in humans, that we just, it's innate that we care, right? That is our that is our job.
Right. So one of the main things that I found when researching this book is this idea that anthropologists and biologists today generally agree that humans evolved as what's known as cooperative breeders. So breeder is kind of like a rude sounding word to apply to ourselves. But what this means for us and for other animals who follow this model is that we're not supposed to raise kids as just a quote unquote nuclear family. It's not supposed to be just a mom or just a mom and a dad. In a cooperatively breeding species, there's a group of caretakers whose help is needed to raise the young successfully. And in our evolutionary past, humans are very flexible as a species. So this might have looked a lot of different ways. Older siblings can be caretakers. They don't have to just be dependents in the household. They can chip in childcare. Grandparents can be caretakers, aunts and uncles, neighbors and friends. And so researchers believe that this is how the human species came to be so successful, that because we had this extra care in raising our young, we were able to start having more babies. Actually, going back to your earlier question,
Right.
we're not as productive as a fish or a bird, but compared to our closest relatives, the other great apes, the chimpanzees, bonobos, gorillas, orangutans, they have their young much farther apart than we do. But it's thought that because we had this extra help in our evolutionary history, we were able to start kind of stacking our dependent young. So now we can have a toddler and a baby, for example, at the same time. Whereas something like an orangutan mother, she might keep nursing her one baby for 8 years, which is a lot. So she has to wait 7 or 8 years before she can even think about having another baby. And so, because we have this history of caring for young together, that may be why scientists can see in brain research now that anybody who spends time around a baby is capable of kind of turning on this network of parenting regions in the brain. So a mother, it's thought, might turn on that caretaking brain because of hormones in her body as she's gestating and birthing the child. A father might turn on this brain system more from the outside in, from the cues of being around a baby. And then an adoptive parent or anybody else, we all have the same brain architecture. And so there's an argument to be made that because we have this evolutionary past of caring together, and anybody had to be ready to be called on to help care for a young Homo sapiens, we all have this system waiting and ready to be switched on.
So this is like the it takes a village approach.
Exactly. It's a cliche now, but it really is true.
You were mentioning apes of saying 8 years, but they still, compared to us, do not need as much. It goes faster in the sense that our children require looking after for much longer than any ape.
Right. Our children aren't fully mature until they're, we say 18, or
Sure.
maybe we say in your 20s, your brain is fully developed, something like that. And an ape would reach adulthood sooner. But among the apes, the mother is the only one who does any real caretaking. The baby is fully dependent on her as a baby, and then as a juvenile, it might be clinging to her fur and being carried around through the forest. So she really does 100% of the work, and that's what limits how often she can have those babies.
So, were you able to determine why some species care and others do not about their offspring?
It's a great question, and I didn't find one answer to that. You know, a lot of evolution is just random chance. There's random mutations that happen in our DNA. There's the circumstances of our habitat and our ecosystem. And some animals survive and some don't. Some pass on their genes. And so, you know, you can find patterns in where caring has evolved. Scientists have found that this cooperative caretaking seems more likely to have evolved in settings where the resources are very unpredictable or where the climate is really harsh. So maybe there's not a lot of rain, or maybe the rainfall is really variable. It rains a ton one year and not at all the next year. So it seems like living in one of these more difficult, unpredictable environments might make it more likely for animals to evolve this cooperative caretaking system.
So, in the caretaking system, when it comes to humans, there's still a breakdown of who is capable and who is not capable of care, right? I mean that breaks down itself within the human race.
Well, I kind of argue in the book that anyone who's a human is capable of care. I mean, not everybody taps into that capability. And some people, you know, we all grow up differently. There's culture, there's all kinds of influences on our choices and our preferences. But I argue that within our brains, at least, and within our DNA, we all have this capacity to care for babies, to care for children. And I argue that that also is why we care for each other so easily.
But brains, you point this out in the book, but brains change with parenthood.
Yeah, there's some really interesting ways that brains change with parenthood. One thread of research that I followed has to do with the brain of a mother who's pregnant, shrinking a tiny bit while she's pregnant. And this sounds a little bit alarming, but scientists think that it really might be a kind of pruning. So, similar to what happens when we're children and adolescents, our brains have grown a lot of extra unneeded neural connections, and then we prune them back to kind of streamline the brain and prepare it for adulthood and maturity. And so there's this small volume loss in the brain of a pregnant mother. And scientists have suggested that you could call this period matrescence, like another kind of adolescence,
Right.
that becoming a mother is another kind of maturing or a change in the architecture, the structure of the brain. And a lot of that volume loss actually comes back over subsequent years, but there is still residual streamlining in a network of brain regions called the default mode network, which is involved in empathy. So that suggests that maybe empathy is a really important part of parenting. Also, scientists have seen a similar effect, if maybe a little bit smaller, in the brains of dads.
Right, you write about fathers as well. You quote a researcher as saying that it matters what you do, not who you are.
Yeah, and that goes back to what I was saying earlier, how this brain research is suggesting that this caretaking architecture can be turned on either from the inside out or from the outside in, just from the fact of us being around other humans who need our care.
So for fathers, it's because they're spending time with babies and that's strengthening the connection.
Right, that's the idea, that the father sees what the need is in the home. He sees that there's this baby who needs his care, and this switches on his caretaking brain.
And I'm fascinated by mole rats. You
Who
what
isn't?
I know, and that's very true. What is it about them that in this case, in this context, that makes them interesting?
Yeah, so the naked mole rat is a really wacky animal. It is often described as the only eusocial mammal. And being eusocial is a word that means living in a colony with a queen and workers like a honeybee or an ant, for example. So mammals don't really do this, except for the naked mole rat. They live in these underground colonies in Africa. There's a queen who has all the babies, which is loads and loads of babies. And then she has this large colony of workers. They're all related to each other. It's all one big family. And the workers cooperate to dig the tunnels, to dig for tubers for everyone to eat. They help to groom and keep the babies warm. They carry the babies around and bring them back to their mom when they need milk. And they're so social, and they scientists might not want me to use the word love, but they seem to, to our eyes, they're so attached to each other that even if you give them as much space as you can in your lab, they will always return to just lying on top of each other in a big cuddle pile. That's their preferred way to be, is just in a big pile, as close together as they can be. And they actually don't generate all of their own body heat. They feel a little bit cool to the touch. And the reason is that they expect to be in such close contact all the time that they use that cuddling to help regulate their body temperature.
With all of these species, with all of these stories, with all of this incredible research that you've done, what do you hope people take away from the book as the through line?
One thing I hope people take away is a sense that we are not alone, both among humans. I want to show people that there's not so much of a divide as we might think between parents and non-parents, that everyone has this caretaking ability that's innate, and that everyone puts that into use when we cooperate and work together and feel empathy toward each other, even if we're not caring for our own children. Another thing I want people to feel is a sense of connection with the animal kingdom, that we're not alone as parents, we're not alone as caring creatures, that all around us there are these other species who are dealing with the same challenges we are and are finding their own ways to survive and do their best.
The name of the book, which is simply fascinating, is The Creature's Guide to Caring: How Animal Parents Teach Us That Humans Were Born to Care. The book is published by Viking. Elizabeth Preston, a great pleasure. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, the name of the book is The Creature's Guide to Caring: How Animal Parents Teach Us That Humans Were Born to Care. The book is published by Viking. Elizabeth Preston is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.